versus Turner. Mr. Karankiewicz.
May it please the court, counsel for the prosecution. My name is Robert Karankiewicz. I represent the appellant, Michael Turner. This is the case of United States of America versus Michael Turner. The issue before the court is whether or not Congress exceeded its Commerce Clause authority by enacting 18 U.S.C. Section 1033b1a. Mr. Turner relies upon the first principles enunciated in U.S. versus Lopez and U.S. versus Morrison for the proposition that Congress has indeed exceeded its authority. Both the district court and the government take no exception with those first principles, but have reached the opposite conclusion, and that brings us here. The basis of the disagreement concerns how to, if I may use the word, pigeonhole the instant case. Lopez set out the three categories of activities that may be regulated by Congress, and both Lopez and Morrison were decided under the third category. That's the activities which have a substantial effect on interstate commerce, and as the court is aware, the Lopez court for the first time reviewed its effect cases and decided that the effect must indeed be substantial. The category relied upon by the district court and the government is the second category, and that's the instrumentalities of or the things or persons in interstate commerce. They being correct, they argue that any discussion of effect on interstate commerce is immaterial. It's Turner's position that the government's position has been correct. First, I think it's fair to say there's no argument that Allstate is neither a person nor a thing in interstate commerce. The question is it an instrumentality? I submit that the error in the government's analysis is to take a stationary entity that may engage in interstate commerce, some of whose activities may engage in interstate commerce.
So what would be enterprises that you acknowledged were instrumentalities of interstate commerce?
Railroads, airlines, common carriers, items.
What else?
Items on the move. As I read that clause,
banks.
Pardon me, Your Honor?
Banks?
No. Banks, I think, clearly fit within the first category as channels. In fact,
as what?
As channels of interstate commerce. I noticed in the government's
what does that mean?
Interstate commerce is conducted through them. I mean, if on a given morning I wake up and I decide I want to engage in some interstate commerce today, I will go to my bank and I will ask them to perform some transaction with some other party who may be in Georgia or California or the like. The bank is my channel. The instrumentality.
Well, isn't insurance the same?
Well, I would say no. Allstate is a stationary Illinois corporation. It's its main office.
Banks are stationary also.
Right. But one does not use Allstate or utilize the services of Allstate for the purpose of engaging in interstate commerce.
Yes, but I mean, if you have a claim, if you have an insurance claim, that claim is going to be paid from an insurance pool, which is multi-state.
It may or may not be. And the only reason I say that, Your Honor,
think,
no.
I don't think, Maine. I don't think they're local insurance pools.
But if I buy a car from General Motors, parts for that car come from all over the United States. And that gets me to what I believe is the danger in this statute. If you can look at this statute and say that despite the words of James Madison about the powers delegated to the federal government are few and clear, that how one can take the simple clause that Congress has the authority to regulate commerce among the several states and get down to the lone individual in Illinois or Michigan or Wisconsin who happens to commit an embezzlement against...
But isn't insurance a good example of a inherently multi-state activity? Because I don't think there are any local insurance pools that would be sufficiently diversified. So the pool is national, probably international, and anytime someone makes a claim, there's money moving around through the system, just as in a bank, in order to pay the claim.
But then, Your Honor, maybe what your comment is going to is the effect analysis rather than the instrumentality analysis.
But you agree that bank embezzlement is something that Congress can regulate.
Well, but it doesn't do so, in my experience, under the Commerce Clause. Every time I'm involved in a bank case below, the jurisdictional element always is proof by the government that bank or SNL was insured, its deposits were insured. That is something separate and distinct from a Commerce Clause jurisdictional basis.
So you're saying they couldn't use the Commerce Clause to punish bank investors?
I'm not saying that they couldn't, Your Honor. I'm saying
if they can do that, why can't they do the same with insurance companies?
Because then I think they're going too far.
Going too far with insurance if they wouldn't be going too far with banks?
Because if they can do this with Mr. Turner and insurance companies, they can do it with any individual, an automobile company, a
There's a number of cases, in which a person who was engaged in business wanted to rezone his property or a piece of property to build something, and he had to pay off an alderman or somebody, there was a conviction in the federal courts for accepting a bribe money because it affected interstate commerce on the theory that if he ever built the building, he would be using items in interstate commerce.
Yes, Your Honor. You're talking about a Hobbs Act prosecution. Sure. And the analysis in a Hobbs Act, just to use your example, is effect on commerce.
Effect on commerce.
Or potential. Because
that is, he hasn't put a brick in the building. He hasn't done anything. He's just trying to get it zoned so he can.
I'm aware of a case where a zoning was changed. The fellow put an addition on his building. He bought a furnace from a Wisconsin manufacturer, and that was the jurisstictional basis in this court affirmed.
In the cases I'm giving you, there wasn't even a building yet.
I have no argument with that proposition. I think maybe I'm misunderstanding Judge Posner. Judge Posner is indicating that he believes an insurance company is an instrumentality of commerce. It's my argument.
I don't understand your reply to Judge Bauer, because it seems to me, I thought you were suggesting that sort of case couldn't be reached by Congress. Here's the case that he gave.
Oh, to the contrary. No, they're brought frequently below.
Why isn't this a very easy case, then?
It is an easy case if you agree with me that a insurance company is not an instrumentality, that we must apply the substantial effect standard. It's the substantial effect standard that will be applied in all subsequent Hobbs Act cases since Lopez, and has been applied. I would also draw the court's attention to the title of the statute.
I'm completely lost because
never admit it. Go ahead.
Because why is this a more difficult effects case than Judge Bauer's or your case with the
burden? I pray that this court does analyze this case under the effects standard. That is the thrust of my argument.
I know, but how is this any different from your furnace case? I don't understand.
Even as far as federal jurisdiction goes?
No.
Oh, because in the furnace case, the furnace moved. That's clearly a person or thing. That is something, it's like the dirty photograph case I cite in my brief. The photograph moved in interstate commerce. I may not like it personally, but under the law, I think that's solid ground for Congress to legislate. But to talk about an American corporation that's stationary, whose business in some respect may affect interstate commerce, and to turn into federal felons all those employees or not who may embezzle, steal, purloin, or the like, I submit goes beyond the first principles enunciated in Lopez and is unhealthy for our federal system. I notice, if I may, I'm save a little time for rebuttal, if that's okay.
Thank you, Mr.
Chairman. Yeah, thank you very much.
Mr. Wilson?
Good morning. May it please the Court, Eric Wilson on behalf of the United States. The statute at issue here, Your Honor, expressly regulates a commercial enterprise. And that is what makes this case fundamentally different from the Lopez and Morrison decisions. In fact, the second sentence, I think, of the Lopez opinion is careful to point out that the statute there did not regulate a commercial activity. The statute here, in contrast, is all about commerce. It regulates and protects this nation's insurance industry. And when it comes to regulating and protecting commerce, Congress's power under the Commerce Clause is sweeping. under either the second or the third category of the Lopez decision, this statute was a valid exercise of Congress's Commerce Clause authority. Under Category 2, the insurance company here was Allstate. Insurance companies engaged in interstate commerce like Allstate are undeniably instrumentalities, persons, or things, whichever word you want to use, in interstate commerce. Congress regulating and protecting those instrumentalities, persons, and things in interstate commerce, even though the threat may have come from purely intrastate activities, and there's no evidence in this case that any part of the embezzlement reached out of the borders of Illinois. Nonetheless, the prohibition of that embezzlement was a valid exercise of Congress's power under the Commerce Clause. Or under Category 3, alternatively, when viewed in the aggregate, embezzlement like Mr. Turner's from insurance companies certainly substantially affect interstate commerce. So the government submits a valid statute under either prong of the second or third prong of the Lopez analysis. The court should ask, was there a rational basis for the statute? That's still a requirement. The legislative history of Section 1033, as is relayed in the government's brief, shows that Congress was concerned about protecting the solvency of this nation's insurance industry.
If a robber went into an insurance company and at gunpoint robbed them of the proceeds, would that fall within the category of the Congress's right to regulate?
Yes.
You could indict the armed robber for stealing money from a insurance company?
Yes.
How about a drugstore, Walgreens drugstore?
Yes.
So there is no inhibition on the power of the federal government to punish street crime like burglary or armed robbery if it affects something in commerce?
As I was sitting there thinking about it, I was thinking about the Lopez case, and what if it had said you can't possess a gun within 1,000 feet of an airport?
No. Get back to mine. Yours is interesting, but I want you to answer on it. Has the federal government, in your opinion, got the authority to prosecute people for simple burglary of a commercial enterprise?
In this day and age...
No.
What?
Aye or nay? Yes, no.
If it's interstate commerce, yes.
No. Commercial enterprise, and they rob or burglarize and take assets. It's a deli,
right.
Liquor store, anything.
Right.
Pick a number.
Yes.
Federal government has jurisdiction.
And the Jones case supports that. If you burn down a building with
commercial... burn down is something else. They get all excited about people who burn things, but I mean, I don't know.
But that's a prototypical state law crime,
yeah,
where the only federal nexus you have, which is even thinner than the one here, is that the building happens to be have some commercial purpose. And Justice Scalia and Justice Thomas, in a very short concurring opinion, point out that the language was sort of fast and loose in the majority opinion about just saying commerce without saying interstate commerce.
Right.
But in this day and age, the distinction between commerce and interstate commerce, it's hard to think of a business that's engaged in commerce that isn't also engaged in interstate commerce. So the answer to all your questions would be yes.
If we can enlarge the federal prosecution far enough, we can eliminate most of state prosecutions. Almost every commercial enterprise that's being burglarized or being robbed, that would fall within the purview of the federal government to prosecute.
That's
now, mind you, I sat the position you are in for some many years ago, and I turned down cases that were perfectly within the purview of the federal government because we didn't have the assets to do it. Somebody else did. But I want to know whether you thought the Commerce Clause would carry on that sort of thing.
Yes.
That's consistent, at least, whether I agree with it or disagree with it is not material. But.
Right. I do agree with that proposition. The limiting principle, such as it is that it's a commercial enterprise.
Mm.
Lopez and Morrison make clear that there are certain limits to Congress's authority to legislate under the Commerce Clause. But when you deal with commercial...
Yeah, whether a gun is within 1,000 feet of anything has nothing to do with Commerce Clause. And so that's a fairly easy one to play games with. But.
So the question is, was there a rational basis? And here Congress was trying to protect the solvency of the nation's insurance industry. That's certainly a reasonable basis to pass the statute. Was the statute reasonably adapted to the rational basis that Congress passed it for? Here, prohibiting embezzlement to protect solvency is certainly a reasonable approach. The Supreme Court has stated in the Morrison opinion that when reviewing a Commerce Clause challenge to a statute, there should in fact be a presumption of constitutionality. And the government would submit that this is in fact an easy case. And therefore, Your Honor, in closing, the United States respectfully submits that this court affirm the defendant's conviction.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Wilson. Mr. Korinkler, Thomas, 2 minutes.
Just a few words, if I might. The McCarran-Ferguson Act has allowed states to regulate insurance companies for over 50 years now. So I think we've also talked about the federal government regulating insurance companies. That is not the case. This statute is the lone exception.
Yeah. Well, the state can also insure banks and have state banks and ignore the bank charge.
Oh, no, I fully agree, Ron. I just want to say that as we stand today, there is no other federal regulation.
You think the insurance companies would be well protected even if the federal government stayed out of embezzlement problems?
Maybe even better protected.
But there are antitrust suits against insurance companies. There's plenty of federal regulation of insurance.
But that, I think the antitrust suit, unless we go back all the way to the Sherman Act, is not...
What do you mean go all the way back to the Sherman Act? What is that?
Well, I misspoke. You're absolutely correct. That is federal regulation. I didn't want to call attention to the very title of the statute.
I don't think anyone has ever said insurance is not... That the insurance business is not something that Congress can regulate because it's local.
No, I think the very fact that Congress passed the McCarran-Ferguson Act is a recognition on Congress's part that if it wished to, it could regulate insurance companies, but it deferred
to the
states.
But it's regulating it in this criminal statute.
But, well, that goes to the argument I think I raised in my reply brief, that there's no regulation here.
What's the title you were going to read?
The title of the statute, which closes with... Well, let me read the entire title. Crimes by or affecting persons engaged in the business of insurance whose activities affect interstate commerce. Going back to my argument that this is a Category 3 case, and lastly I would point out that it's the way the case is pleaded below. This is a motion directed to the face of the pleadings. The indictment, the jurisdictional hook in the indictment is all state whose activities affect interstate commerce. I guess I would go back to, I pray that you analyze this under Category 3. If you do, I believe you will not find a substantial effect on interstate commerce. I did a little arithmetic, if I may just close with this. If we're a $2 trillion a year economy divided by 360...
I'm sorry?
$2 trillion economy.
I've heard said we're a $2 trillion...
It's more than $9 trillion.
In that case, the daily amount would probably exceed $12 to $15 billion. So Mr. Turner's several thousand dollar embezzlement here is de minimis.
Nothing.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Kerenkwitz. And you, of course, were appointed, and we're very grateful for your accepting the appointment and your vigorous efforts on behalf of the